University of Colorado.
Today on CU on the Air, we're excited to welcome Dr. Janelle Owens, Associate Professor in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. While she teaches courses in applied analytical chemistry, including environmental chemistry and forensic chemistry, Professor Owens is also a certified whiskey chemist with the Federal Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau. Welcome, Professor Owens. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to get you on the record right away. Do you spell whiskey with a Y or an EY?
I spell it with an EY.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm glad we didn't have to start this off with an argument.
Oh, okay. Now, if I were from Scotland, I'd spell it just Y, right?
Maybe you could tell our listeners the difference there.
So as far as I understand it, whiskey is originated from a Gaelic word for water for life. And the Irish spelling of whiskey is EY, and the Scottish spelling is just with a Y.
As an Irish guy, I'm strictly, firmly in the EY camp.
And do you have a favorite, Ken?
I have, yes, several, but
okay.
We'll save that. How's that?
That's a later on.
So you're a certified whiskey chemist. What do you have to do to get that designation?
So the TTB, which was formerly the ATF, holds a proficiency testing or a certification program. And they invite folks who have at least a chemistry degree, who have a fully outfitted laboratory, to participate in this proficiency testing. So this all started probably in 2014, I think. I had met Michael Myers, who is the managing director of Distillery 291, which is located here in Colorado Springs. Michael had asked me if I would become a certified distilled spirits chemist through the TTB. And I had absolutely no idea of what he was talking about. So I had to go Google it. And then I figured out what the TTB was requiring. So a colleague of mine in the department, Dr. Keith Oppenheim, and I sent in our paperwork as required by the website to participate in this proficiency testing. The federal government then sends you, as an applicant, two bottles of distilled spirits in the mail, and you are expected to test them. So they have a series of tests that they are expecting. You need to determine proof of the beverage by various means, and then report things that they are looking at for health and safety reasons, such as methanol, because that's a toxic alcohol, the fusel oils, which are higher molecular weight alcohols, and carameling agents, which is interesting to the TTB because it can be indicative of fraudulent product. So you want to use that as an authentication tool. So that's how we originally got started, was just doing some of these chemical analyses. And the first time we did it, we were terrible at it. So we got better and passed the certification the second time.
That's interesting. It's also interesting to me. I understand you're not a particular fan of the taste of whiskey, but you study it. So why is that?
Well, from a chemical perspective, it's very interesting because there are so many hundreds, if not thousands, of potential chemicals that can be found in the beverage. I did my PhD at UC Davis. And Davis is known for its enology program. And it seemed as a unique and interesting project to really become engaged with a business community. Much of what I do is not at all related to what a distiller may potentially need from a chemist, but it was just really interesting from an intellectual perspective.
Do you find that distillers seek you out?
On occasion, we haven't done any sort of marketing, so our names only appear on the TTB website.
I see.
As being certified chemist.
Tell us about your first encounter with whiskey.
My first encounter was in Scotland on some remote castle. And a tour guide had all of the people in this small tour bus contribute a couple of pounds to purchase a nice bottle of single malt. He poured out drams for all of us. And we all, the Americans at least, talked it back while standing on this the top of the castle here, the ramparts of the castle. And he got very mad at us for throwing it back. He said, this is not some cheap college drink. This is something to be savored and enjoyed. Ouch. But it burned. It really burned. And so I don't think I had whiskey again or even thought about it until I was invited by Michael of Distillery 291 to participate in this certification exercise.
Oh. What are some of the common organic compounds in whiskey?
Common organic compounds are most typically going to be those compounds that arise from the simple ingredients that are in whiskey. So it's the yeast and the esters that are oftentimes produced by the yeast, which are used in the fermentation product. And then all of those organic compounds that arise from the malted grain.
What are some of your findings on the palatability of whiskey in relation to chemistry?
Well, I haven't done any sort of sensory profiling. I don't know how to do that kind of study to look at how beverages engage with the senses. So I leave that to those chemists and sensory scientists who can do that. But what I've been interested in is the use of mass spectrometry as a tool to actually profile the chemical fingerprint of the whiskeys. So if we can use mass spectrometry, which the specific technique we're using is something called gas chromatography mass spectrometry, or GCMS. And most people hear of GCMS from one of the DSI shows, right? So they're in the forensic lab and they'll say, put it on the GCMS, and then instantly we've got a hit. Well, it doesn't happen that quickly. But GCMS is a great tool because it can actually determine fragmentation patterns of volatile or semi-volatile compounds. And you can use that fingerprinting, that structural fragmentation information, to match it to a library that is produced by the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, or NIST. By looking at a putative match, you don't necessarily have authentic standards that you can absolutely confirm identity. That allows you to come up with a full list of potential compounds that could be found in a beverage. And using other database tools, that will then allow you to tie into what perhaps are taste or odor characteristics of compounds. Hmm. So it's a multi-layered approach. I haven't figured out how to streamline it yet.
Yeah. It's been said that chemistry in general, and perhaps whiskey in particular, are like a puzzle. Do you find that so?
Oh, absolutely. And I love puzzles, which is probably why I was drawn to this field to begin with.
And how are they like puzzles?
Well, you don't necessarily have the full picture when you start to investigate something. So you use the tools that you have in a laboratory to understand aspects or facets of a chemical problem. And by using all of these tools, you can puzzle things together, right? Build those pieces so that, or connect those pieces rather, to actually have a better understanding, if not a complete picture. I would say that's pretty rare, but a better understanding of a chemical system.
Do you study other distilled spirits?
Well, in addition to the whiskey, the TTB has mailed us tequila before to analyze. I've looked at cachaça before for a local company. Cachaça is a Brazilian spirit made from sugar.
I know it from bad experience.
Uh-oh. One too many caipirinha, huh? Nope. So we've looked at that. We've done some work with a distillery up in Fort Collins looking at some bourbon blends that have some cream in them. I imagine, I haven't tasted them, but I imagine that they're somewhat close to what you'd expect of a Bailey's Irish cream, for example. And having that milky substance in there really complicates the analysis. So additives are certainly something you'd have to investigate. And then we've looked at, in one of our studies, we were actually trying to validate an assay we were developing to look at antioxidant capacity. And because distilled spirits are a relatively simple type of food sample, that's what we used as our model to start looking at the amount of antioxidants in these distilled spirits. So in that study, we had a range of different spirits that we had included.
People have been drawn to alcohol for obvious reasons. Aside from the consumption, it seems like it's been a consistent part of culture for thousands of years. Why do you suppose that is?
It could often be probably a multi-pronged reason. It's something that requires craft and skill to produce something that is well done. And because of the craft or skill that's imparted to this process, it is something that can be used for a celebratory reason, right? It's a special beverage to drink, so it's associated with those celebrations. It certainly is a social tool to draw people together. So I think for many of those reasons, it's probably still why it is so important for so many people as part of, if not daily, then weekly or monthly, part of life.
You're not a fan of sipping whiskey, but are there spirits you do like?
I do like tequila in a really good margarita. I like, I guess a mojito is always good in the summertime.
Yeah.
But mostly I stick with beer or wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a Friday afternoon question.
Okay, perfect.
You don't like the taste of whiskey, but you use it in recipes. Tell us about that.
Let's see. The only recipe in which we actually use whiskey at home, well, I guess there's two. Hot toddy if you have a cold with some honey, lemon, black tea. But my husband uses whiskey whenever he makes bread pudding. So he'll soak raisins in whiskey for at least 4 hours. And so those soaked raisins then go into the bread pudding, and he reserves that whiskey for making a butter whiskey sauce that you then drizzle over the bread pudding. And it's a recipe from the Bon Ton Cafe, so you can look at it online. And it is something that my mother has fallen in love with and has now officially designated as the Christmas dessert.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll be over.
Okay. You're more than welcome. Anytime.
So I have a related question. I make a barbecue sauce that I call Old Crow barbecue sauce because that's one of the ingredients. It used to be Maker's Mark barbecue sauce, but I figured why spend the extra money on the good bourbon when I'm cooking it in a barbecue sauce. So do you think there's an advantage to using the good stuff as opposed to something like Old Crow?
Well, I think it's probably advantageous to use the good stuff when it is a recipe that uses those simple ingredients where you really want it to shine through. When you have something like a barbecue, for example, you have such intense flavors probably coming from the barbecue itself, the creation of compounds during the Maillard reaction or the char that is associated, the caramelization with cooking meat. And so it just probably really depends on what type of flavor impact you're going for. You should do a taste off.
Yeah, good idea. Now, your biography states you specialize in the development of quantitative methods for the analysis of pharmaceuticals, personal care products, and nanomaterials in foods and environmentally relevant samples. Quite a mouthful there. What does it really mean?
I'm really interested in measuring trace concentrations, so very, very dilute amounts of chemicals that humans produce in places that we impact. So that could be our water supplies, it could be in food, it could be in soils, plants. So I'm interested in those types of compounds for which there might be a potential health effect, whether that is a negative health effect, an impact, or something that could be potentially beneficial. So that's my interest in looking at antioxidants, for example, in foods, or developing new assays to actually measure those.
Can you give us an example of an outcome of your environmental research?
So one of the big projects that we're working on now, and I have to give kudos to the Dean's Office, the College of Letters, Arts, and Sciences here at UCCF. When Dean Braza was our dean here, he funded our work in a program called the Dean's Research Initiative. And we ended up calling this project EPIC, which stood for the Environmental Perfluorinated Chemical Impact Collaboration. And so what we were interested in looking at were these perfluorinated chemicals that are so often described in the news, the so-called forever chemicals, and parts of the Fountain Creek watershed here in Colorado Springs have been adversely impacted by activities where the use of aqueous film-forming foams, which contain these forever chemicals, have been utilized and then spread into the environment. So that's one example of where we're actually collecting samples and profiling water, soil, and sediment within Fountain Creek to understand the impact of human activity on this very small section of the watershed.
And I understand you originally wanted to be a doctor, but that didn't work out. Why not?
I thought, like many bright young people, if you're interested in science, that's what you do. It allows you to be a critical thinker, and you have a real direct impact on society, right? You're helping people through some of the scariest, most intimate, frightening, happy times of their lives by being a medical provider. But two things went wrong for me. The first was when I was about to start college, I was a participant in a research program in MD Anderson Cancer Center, which is in the medical complex of downtown Houston. Across the street from MD Anderson was a St. Luke's Hospital. And we were invited as these young research interns to participate in a tour of this famous hospital. When they started the tour, our docent said, if anybody faints at any part of this, you know where I'm going with this, right? Any part, you're going to have to go to the ER and pay a $70 copay. I said, whatever. So then we went to an observation room to actually see the world famous heart surgeon, Denton Cooley, perform open heart surgery.
Wow.
So it was this observation dome, and they were just finishing the work on the patient. And as I was told, I don't know how true this is because I know nothing about cardiology, they were tugging some of the lung tissue out from the field where they had been doing surgery to make sure that there was no impact to lung tissue, that there had been no minor cuts or anything like that that could cause an adverse effect. All I saw was something that looked like green cottage cheese, and I hit the floor. So I probably wasn't going to be cut out for medicine.
$70 later.
I managed to avoid it. Talked my way out of that one.
Well, what got you interested in chemistry then?
So when I was about to be a junior in college, I got to participate in a research project with my faculty research advisor at my undergrad institution, Southwestern University. So I applied to be in the lab of Dr. Emily Niemeyer, and she took me on. It was a project where we had been invited to a community in northern Mexico, in the colonias communities. And a local doctora in this community had noticed a number of adverse health effects in many patients that she was seeing. So in parts of northern Mexico, there were many foreign-owned factories that had set up shop. So many migrant workers coming from interior parts of Mexico had migrated northward, had settled down, started families, or had brought other family members. But they lived in squalid conditions in these shanty towns, essentially, along the U.S.-Mexico border. So we had been invited there to start participating in a chemical survey project. So what types of environmental contaminants were these folks exposed to? And was there any potential information that we could offer this physician about the types of chemicals we had found? Could that information be useful to her to actually start looking up some studies that would be in the epidemiological research realm? And so that was the first time that I got to understand this connection between chemistry and human health. I realized I could be useful to society as a chemist, and I didn't have to be a physician to do something to understand how human health would be impacted or affected, rather. That was a profound experience for me. So I'm forever grateful to her for getting me started on the path of research.
So you certainly don't seem shy, but I read that you were so when you were a grad student at Cal Davis. And like a lot of people, you feared the thought of giving presentations, but you learned something that you passed on to your students. What was that?
You're telling a story. The information or what I share with my students is that you tell a story, and it's your story. You're the one who knows it better than anybody. So make it interesting. We're all storytellers. We all have something that we want to share with somebody else. And so I think the fear part comes in trying to represent what you've read or researched or synthesized to the best possible way to be as accurate as possible. And that's, I think, where students really get hung up, is this thought, this self-criticism, that you don't understand the information well enough to be able to authentically and accurately present it. And that's what really gets them nervous. But it's all about telling that story.
Well, being of Irish heritage, I don't need to be encouraged to tell stories. I need to be encouraged to dial it back, I think.
Well, and the Irish are known for so many of those great legends, right?
Yes.
You live in the land of the fairy folk, and you have Fionn MacCool, right?
Absolutely. I hear that your classes at UCCS are quite popular. We were talking about your students a little bit before we started recording, but tell me about your students.
I have such incredible respect for my students. I am constantly in awe of everything that they are capable of doing while they are managing so many other things outside of their college experience. And so I think by recognizing what they do to have a good college experience, it drives me to make sure that my classes are the most worthwhile that they can possibly be.
And do you incorporate your whiskey research and work into your classes?
If I do, it's only as a minor example. So one of the techniques that we would use in the TTB certification is to do a titration problem. And titration and torture both start with the letter T, which is how many Gen Chem students see titration, and the calculations associated with titration chemistry. So by providing some examples, I guess it informs why this is important, that it is something you should know how to do if you one day want to be at the point where you are getting alcohol mailed to you for free. That's always enticing to them. But other than that, it really does not inform my teaching. It really just started as a fun project to work with Michael. And it was something that I focused on in my sabbatical time, and that was developing this antioxidant assay that could be useful for distilled spirits. But it's one of those projects that I've wanted to keep for myself, just because it is just fun.
Had I been able to combine my college classes with whiskey, I could have saved a lot of time.
You minored in whiskey or minored in beer?
What brought you to UCCS?
I had started my postdoc at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. So I was in the Forensic Science Center, and I loved it. It was such a unique experience to be able to work at that type of facility with that type of instrumentation and people who were infinitely smarter than I ever could hope to be. I mean, it was just such a neat experience. But I really, really missed working with students and having the opportunity to come up with my own ideas. So much of what I was doing at Livermore was really mission-based science, as it necessarily should be at a national laboratory setting. So when my postdoc finished, I decided that I would like to look for a faculty position. But I wanted to have a faculty position where I could really be the person who was teaching students in a laboratory setting. My thought was that I'd probably want to be at a predominantly undergrad institution, or at least a department where the terminal degree offered was the master's degree. So I could work with some graduate students as well. So this really was the perfect fit. And I came out for the interview and saw Pikes Peak, and I had to be really careful not to walk into cars or, you know, walk into a door, because you just had this astounding view. And I went back to Livermore and told them about this mountain that was here, and they said, yep, we understand. We'll see you later. And so it's been a really good fit for me.
I think many people can tell a similar tale.
Yeah, it just this natural landscape is just so awe-inspiring. You're so lucky to see this every day.
So what's ahead for you and for your students?
You know, I have been really focusing lately on graduate student training. I have just a couple of undergraduates who are working with me right now. So my recent focus has really been on the graduate student training. So my immediate goals in the next few weeks and months to get a lot of their research papers written up, submitted in the literature. But that's really going to be my goal, is to focus on that continued mentorship. As I continue working on the whiskey side of things, I need to start advertising so I can have a better outreach with local distillers who might need a chemist to help them out with some interesting research projects, or even brewers. There is a certification program offered through the TTB for brewing science and the need for looking at beer. It's something I haven't even looked at. One of my colleagues in my department, his name is Lewis Lowe, and he worked at Carlsberg Brewery for about 20 years.
Wow.
He comes into the lab and he volunteers and he helps me mentor students. And so we're going to come up with some fun projects as well. Some of the things we've been talking about lately are really looking at how chemical profiles change as people change how they like to drink whiskey. So for example, what happens when you add ice, or what happens if you mix that whiskey with water? How does that change the volatile profile and what you're actually tasting in that drink?
I'm ahead of you. I've been involved in that research project now for years.
Oh, if you publish, let me know so I can be sure to cite you.
Publishing, it sounds like work.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, Professor Janelle Owens, it's been fascinating hearing about your chemistry work and your sidelight with whiskey. And we appreciate you joining us here today on See You on the Air. And although we're recording this remotely via Zoom, we'll do a virtual toast in your honor when we get off work today.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciated the conversation and all of your time. And I think the Irish would say slancha, right?
Slancha.
Slancha.
The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConnellog, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.